100 Ways to Create Wealth by Steve Chandler and Sam Beckford. Read by Steve Chandler.
I'd like to open with a quote from Ayn Rand. And she said, quote, "If you ask me to name the proudest distinction of Americans, I would choose the fact that they were the people who created the phrase to make money. No other language or nation had ever used these words before. Americans were the first to understand that wealth has to be created." End quote. Introduction. You can set yourself free. Sam Beckford had 5 straight business failures before he turned it all around. These 100 ways represent the exact changes he made to execute the turnaround and become a millionaire. They not only worked for him, but they have also worked for hundreds of his clients who have transformed failure into success. When we seek to help you create more wealth in life, we're not trying to make you more self-important or encourage you to find ego gratification by the accumulation of material objects. Our intention is to give you a rare and strange freedom, the freedom to move easily in life, go where you want to, and do what you want to do. Wealth can deliver that freedom. We want you to find the freedom to help yourself thrive in your true purpose, to find the leverage to help loved ones, and to financially help organizations and causes you want to help. Many people shake their heads when they hear about conditions in Africa and can't do anything except curse about it. Then they curse people who have the power to help, the people who have the freedom to send money and dig a well in Africa, but don't. We want this book to give you a chance to be one of the people who have the power to help. We are not going to be talking about clever money tricks, how to trick people into anything, or how to do quasi-pyramid schemes, or catch the latest wave of hot opportunities. You yourself are the real opportunity available to you. You can inspire yourself to generate earned wealth, the kind of money that comes from serving the greatest number of people in the most preferred ways. We both spend our days coaching people on their path toward greater wealth. Our clients often enjoy surprising success, and whenever they do, it's always because of a breakthrough in their thinking. These breakthroughs have been listed in this book and capped at 100. We've chosen the breakthroughs that work the best and the most often. And since this is a book about what works for others, it is also a book about what will work for you. This is not a book about investing or money management. It is merely a recounting of our collective experience as personal coaches and business coaches. It's also the biographies of 2 men who went from deep debt and failure to consistent major paydays. Creating wealth is a different concept than discovering a way to cash in on some wealth or a way to take advantage of some faddish external circumstance. We're talking about creating your wealth from within yourself, finding that place inside where you love to be, and finding that work on the outside that you love to do. So, this book is about love and money. Don't be ashamed to follow the directions. Don't be afraid to be inspired by the ideas. The more inspired you are, the faster you will create. Traditional scriptures say we were born in the image of our Creator. To what degree do we really believe that? Maybe simply to the degree that we create. Our range of wealth creation is dependent on our belief in our capacity to create. This book was written to empower that belief. Number 1. Draw a line in the sand. Peter Drucker says, Quote, "When you see a successful business, someone once made a courageous decision." End quote. Sam Beckford likes to tell his new clients about the most defining moment of his business success and career. It happened long before he became known as the small business millionaire. This defining moment didn't happen at his business. It actually happened at a grocery store. Sam and his wife had finished shopping and went to pay for their groceries with his debit card, and the card didn't clear through. So he tried it again, and the card didn't work again. And the cashier offered to try a third time, saying, "There must be a problem with the card." Sam said, "Yeah, I know the problem. There's no money in the account." He was there with his wife, and they had to leave the store and leave all their groceries to be put back on the shelves. And there was something very painful about reaching a point where he couldn't even feed his family. Sam said, "It was the most embarrassing, humiliating thing. This is never going to happen again. I'm sick of being broke. I'm sick of being poor. I'd been trying to play the odds that there'd still be a little money left in the account, but walking out of that store that day was the turning point for all the business achievement that happened after that. It's the moment I woke up." Sam now tells that story to a lot of people who are trying to make it as small business owners and professionals of all kinds. Sometimes they come up to him afterwards at a seminar and say, "You know, I can identify with that grocery store story because it happened to me 2 weeks ago." As for lack of wealth, we can relate. We've been there. We've been down and in debt with utterly failed careers and ventures, probably in worse ways than you. So don't try to push that pain away. Let yourself really feel what you are missing, because that's when you'll be focused enough to say no to that feeling. You can say no to feeling that way ever again. Now you can find a place to take a stand. Be completely negative about what you no longer want. Refuse to let it in. Stand up to it. Draw your line in the sand. Step back and dare it, the old you, to ever cross that line again. Use a moment like that to be your final resolve to say, "Never again, never." There's a positive turning point hidden in everything, even in something that feels that bad. People like me, who have recovered from addictions, eventually reach what they call a bottom. They can't go any lower without dying. But once they've hit their bottom, they often find new strength to say, "That's it. There's just no way that I'm going to live like this anymore. I don't care what I have to do. I don't care how uncomfortable it is. I don't care what they tell me to do. I'll even go through those 12 steps. I'm doing it because this is the end of this life." Wealth has steps too, just like addiction recovery. And the steps work. And the first step is to draw a line in the sand. Number two, ask each day, "Why not me?" Nathaniel Brandon says, quote, "For good or for ill, self-concept is destiny." End quote. In life, we do what we believe we can do, no more than that. Then, based on the limits of that belief, we become stuck in our financial situation. Soon we are envying others. We create an artificial separation between ourselves and the people we envy, people we believe can do what we cannot do. However, this separation is so flimsy, it can be broken through quite easily, because this separation is simply a thought. It's nothing real. In our minds, and just in our minds, out of psychic self-protection, out of having an alibi for why we are not really successful, we just say, Wealth is so far away. Or we say, it's unimaginable to be driving in a car like that, or to be taking trips like that, or to be putting the kids in a college like that. It's so unimaginable that I won't even allow myself to get disappointed by thinking about it. I won't even picture myself doing it. And because we believe we can't do it, we never will. There was a time when I was a boy that I didn't believe I could swim, so I didn't. And people would try to convince me to just jump in the water and it'll hold you up, and I didn't believe it. And so I didn't swim. And the times I tried, it seemed like I was sinking. I got out fast. It was only after I believed it that I could do it. Thoughts are all we've got. And yet, we don't examine them. There are people who treat wealth and success like some kind of really lucky external event that happened to them. In other words, they distance themselves from causal aspects of belief. But it is a false distance. We have a client who, when he talks about a good month that he had, says, "Oh, I was really blessed that month." And after a while, I said to him, "Do you know that you only use the term blessed in reference to money? Do you realize that? Don't you believe that your life itself is a blessing? That your family is a blessing? Your ability to breathe and think are blessings as well? How about your ability to have earned that wealth and to have caused it?" But he was stuck in the mindset that said he was humbled by his astonishing blessing of money. "I've been blessed again." So I asked him, "What blessing are you now referring to?" "Well, the good month I had in April. We made more money than in any other month. We were really blessed that month." And he, by thinking that, kept money-making as something distant from himself. Only some divine intervention could give him money. He couldn't believe his own role in creating it for himself. And that's a tragic elevation of money. It's putting money on a pedestal higher than your own religion or spirituality to keep using the term blessed only in reference to money. And to be humbled and in awe of life only when it comes to money. Why not have money be just like anything else, instead of giving it religious standing? If you want to have some eggs, you'll just go make some eggs. And if you want to have some money, why not just go make some? It's not something you have to be awe-stricken over. You don't have to put in an immediate call to the Almighty when it flows in. Do you do that when water flows in? Or a breeze? It's just cause and effect money we're talking about here. Serve, and you shall receive. It's not something that ought to inspire tears streaming from your eyes in humble adoration. It's no different than anything else you want to make. The blessing happens when you are born. The blessings continue when you wake up in the morning. That's when you're blessed. It's not, "I'm not blessed yet. I made my sales calls, but I'm not blessed yet." We were attending spiritual teacher Byron Katie's school, and she was getting ready to teach the day's lesson, adjusting her microphone, and she sneezed. When someone in the audience said, "God bless you," she said, "You're too late." Number 3, don't wait for perfection. Robert Collier said, quote, "Start where you are. Distant fields always look greener, but opportunity lies right where you are." End quote. Sometimes the circumstances look all wrong. Things aren't perfect. Should we go ahead anyway? How do we decide? I love to use the example of Troy Shondell, although Sam has to ask his father about the early 1960s when Shondell was a teen idol singer. Influenced by the late Buddy Holly, Elvis, Little Richard, and many more of the early rockers, Troy Schondell began his singing career while still in high school in Fort Wayne, Indiana. One of his first local recordings was Kissin' at the Drive-In on Mercury Records. That record became a big regional hit that gained him hope for future national attention. Please don't say you don't remember Kissin' at the Drive-In. Troy's fame soon spread to the Chicago area, where he and his band became the first rock band to ever appear in the then-famous Brass Rail Blues and Jazz Club in downtown Chicago. Troy and his band had fans standing in line to watch rock and roll for the first time in downtown Chicago. However, the momentum didn't hold, and Troy bounced from small label to small label without much luck. Then, in October of 1960, Troy's father died of a heart attack. With his father's death, Troy's mother inherited a small business that was her only income. In order to keep it going, she asked Troy to come home and help her. His dream of hit music would have to wait. So Troy quit the band and gave up music in order to help with the immediate crisis. In February 1961, his mother encouraged Troy to audition for an extra part in a movie being filmed locally after seeing an ad in the local paper. At the audition, a man familiar with Troy's music said he would finance a recording session if Troy would consider trying it again. Troy was overjoyed, especially since he had been hanging on to a special song, just in case an opportunity like this came along. It was a song that a local disc jockey in Fort Wayne had called to Troy's attention. The song was called "This Time We're Really Breaking Up." There was a tremendous blizzard the day of the session on April 1, 1961, in Batavia, Illinois, and only three musicians were able to make it to the session: a guitar player, a sax player, and a drummer. Should they even do this session? Where would the bass sound come from? It didn't seem like the best time to try for a big comeback recording. But maybe timing wasn't everything. Maybe desire and passion meant more than timing. The session was a go. Troy played piano, vibes, and worked hard to get a bass-type sound out of his guitar. He completely threw himself into a heartbreakingly great vocal performance of "This Time." They were exhausted at the end of the session, but they'd made the record, and now it was time to play it for the world. Every record company in Chicago turned it down. So Troy decided to start his own label. At least that way he would have an actual vinyl disc to play. And one day, while visiting WJJD in Chicago, Troy tried to get airplay for the record he knew represented his future, even if it meant he had to beg. Luckily, that night, the DJ was a former supporter of Troy's, and he took pity on the desperate singer. He got permission from the station to play "This Time," but only once, and it had to be on his Rate the Record show, airing late in the evening. It was a gamble for Troy, because the records that lost the phone-in contest were never to be played again. Troy's record, the one recorded in the blizzard with only three musicians, won the contest. Troy's sparse and haunting "This Time" had stunned listeners with its beauty, pain, and passion. Now in rotation at that station, the record began to sell. In fact, 10,000 copies were sold in the very first week. "This Time" topped the charts for an unprecedented 16 weeks during the summer of 1961. Although other successes would follow for Troy, none of the others might have ever happened without "This Time." "This Time" went on to sell over 3 million copies that first year. Many people would have used that blizzard in Illinois in April of 1961 as a reason to postpone the session. The timing wasn't right. They didn't even have a bass player. How are you going to get your bass sound with guitar? Bad timing, if there ever was bad timing. But Troy Schondell put enough passion into that stormy night to electrify a whole nation of teenage record buyers. Even today, the record sounds great, and the sparse and funky production values only heighten its impact. It feels raw and real. You can download the record today and crank it up, and don't miss the message as you listen. Circumstance is nothing. Passion is everything. Every once in a while, we put a little slogan up in our office that says, "Doing it now is more important than doing it right." We don't mean don't do it as well as you can. We just mean, if you wait until the timing is perfect, it'll never happen. Just do it now. This time. Number 4. Use 1 hour a day. Zig Ziglar says, quote, "Success and happiness are not matters of chance, but choice." End quote. It's amazing what you have time for, especially once you decide to make time for it. People who say they don't have the time to build up a certain skill, or get that online course of study going, or learn another language, or start a home business, are only fooling themselves. If you had a kidney condition where you needed to get on a dialysis machine for more than an hour a day, or get a daily blood transfusion, or do your chemotherapy, you wouldn't say, "Well, I'll just have to die because I don't have an extra hour." You'd just say, "Fine, only an hour? I can do that." And you would be right. Anyone can free up an hour a day for anything. And you can put anything into that hour. Anybody has time to put something into an hour's time slot and devote the fully focused hour to it without losing a beat, without losing any efficiency at all, or any relationships. In fact, here's the irony. If you singled out an hour for something special, the other hours of your life would probably improve. They would become more efficient, not less. If you took an hour away from your life today, you would become more efficient in the other 23 hours than you were before, because you would pay more attention to priorities. You would become more awake to your precious time. Work expands to fill the time allotted for it. So give yourself an hour. Start today. What will you do for your special 1 hour? Can you put something in there that will create wealth for you? Years ago, Thomas Watson, who led the original success of the early amazing IBM, had a favorite motto. It only had one word in it. The word was, "Think." That was his slogan. He had it posted all around the company. He knew that the more his people remembered to do that, the faster IBM would succeed, and he was right. And the same is true in your life. Try this. Just sit alone for an hour with a yellow pad and have it be your creative thinking time. Let whatever arises from your subconscious mind find its way to paper. Don't judge anything. Just take dictation. You'll be amazed. Many people don't think about what their financial possibilities are. They don't even think of where they want to go. They're so lost inside their problematic daily existence, they don't make time to see the big picture. They're just doing things, always busy and running, racing ahead, trying in vain to get into their own future. And when they're not doing that, they're trying to kill time with the TV or internet. People who aren't really living their true lives and who aren't into what they really want to be into, which is a recommended prerequisite for real wealth creation, are trying to distract themselves from that very fact. They want to forget about how unfulfilled they are, so they use all kinds of things, including entertainment, to distract themselves from that horrible feeling. If I'm not too happy with what I'm up to in life, I can tune into this TV talk show and hear people yelling at each other and hear all the bad news and hear about people who have gone missing or who are trapped underground and soon I'll follow all that with my heart in my throat. That is a way for me to tune into other people's problems as a way of not looking at my own. I'm tuning into other people's lives as a way of not living my own. Pretty soon, I've got these surrogates living my life for me on the soap opera of the evening news, in the missing person reports, in the crime shows, on sports teams, and even on the radio in my car. I'm letting these tragic people live my life for me. Do I really need to know all that news? Do I really need to know about Russell Crowe hitting some bellman in a hotel with a phone? I only need to know about that if I'm the person suing Russell Crowe, which is the 101st way to create wealth. Make Russell Crowe angry, let him hurt you, then sue him. Come to think of it, thinking about all that self-distracting I do, maybe I do have an hour I can devote to learning what my mind can do. Everybody has an hour, and that's all we're talking about. Number 5. Make money a game. Oscar Wilde said, quote, "Life is too important to be taken too seriously," end quote. People bring more energy to a game than they do to anything else. Everybody at your family gathering can be tired and not want to do anything, but if somebody says, "We're going to play volleyball in the backyard," everyone jumps up and runs out. And all of a sudden, everyone who is tired and weary and had a rough week and didn't want to do anything is yelling and having fun and running around the yard. What just happened? The paradigm just shifted from real life to a game. What you did was introduce a game into their lives. Games inspire higher energy. They fire up the imagination, and the body has new life. And the same paradigm shift can happen in your workday. Once you fully grasp the power of games, you'll know what to do. Notice how people can play board games like Monopoly for hours on end. They play with great spirit and inventiveness. Video and computer games even more so. A pickup game of basketball in the park after a long, hard day at work can wake a person up like nothing else. It's the joy of just playing. Kids want to stay up and play all night. There is no fatigue when you're playing. Contrast that to working. Working grinds you down. It hits you even before you do it. Just the thought of it. Just the thought of your workday can fill you with dread and anxiety. You're weary before you begin. Wealth happens to us fastest when we can play it into existence. But it's hard, given our history, to associate play with money. Money is often just terrifying to people. Far from seeing it as a game, people see it as survival. Money is like oxygen to them. Not to be fooled around with. Serious business. You can die from a lack of it. And that very belief system is what takes all the fun out of making it, all the joy, all the creativity. The richest man in America, Bill Gates, has always said, quote, "We only have one product here at Microsoft, human imagination," end quote. But how can you fire up your imagination when you are fighting to survive, gasping for air, drowning in debt? Those are all just thoughts, but they are thoughts that shut off the flow of life and wealth. Wealth comes from imagination, from playful thoughts and tireless energy. Therefore, one of the fastest ways to create wealth is to quit working. Instead of working, do something you love so much it feels like play. Like the way playing basketball felt to Michael Jordan, or hosting a TV show feels to Oprah, or writing Harry Potter novels felt to J.K. Rowling. Stephen King has made hundreds of millions of dollars writing. In the morning, he works passionately on his novel in progress, with heavy metal music roaring in the background. In the afternoon, he returns to work on the writing he's just playing with. He calls that afternoon project My Toy Truck. Soon, his toy truck becomes the new novel. It all begins in play, and hundreds of millions of dollars in royalties keep flowing in. Notice he doesn't call that afternoon project My Difficult Work Project. And that's why Stephen King makes the money that struggling authors don't. He plays, and they work. Our small business and personal services clients often jump ahead in sales when they make the numbers of their business a game. Once they get a game going, the numbers are no longer what scares them. They become part of the play. Most people have the money part of their profession be the buried part, the grim, dark part that nobody looks at. We see so many businesses where everybody hides the numbers because they don't want the employees to know they're having a bad month. So they never allow people to get involved in the very game element that would revitalize their business. Playing games works. A game might be like, we want 100 new customers by April 1st, and we're going to put the number in the back room, and we're all going to celebrate by going to Disney World if we hit it early. People who convert money into a game get a different kind of energy from their people than if it's just a grim, real-life kind of approach to business. It's the playful kind of energy that creates wealth. George Bernard Shaw said, quote, "We don't stop playing games because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing." End quote. Money flows to the young at heart. So we want to shift work to play any chance we get. It's a mind shift to do so, even if it's just to keep us from growing old. Also, to give us energy. Notice that when we change something from work to play, energy and creativity increase. I noticed this working in the factory in Detroit when I was young, making pieces on the assembly line. How dull and fatiguing. Until my co-worker and I decided to play a game. We would have a contest to see who could make the most pieces. We inserted wires into metal boxes in the next hour. Loser buys dinner. Go. And boy, was it fun then, going like crazy, looking over at each other to see how many pieces we had stacked up. It was really fun. And we had so much new energy for it because we were playing a game now, whereas before, we were just working. We were just growing old. Number 6. Learn your process. Nathaniel Brandon said, quote, "It is not enough to want to succeed. You must make it your conscious purpose to succeed." End quote. After Sam failed 5 times, he decided to study every successful business case history he could get his hands on. He applied what he learned. He studied, for example, the history of McDonald's. Sam said, "A big realization for me with McDonald's was that a lot of their wealth as a company came from real estate ownership. McDonald's is the largest commercial property owner next to the Catholic Church. And that's when I made the decision to focus on trying to own the real estate that my own small dance and music studio businesses run from. It was good enough for McDonald's, and it also worked for us." Even learning the profit process has a fear factor, though. Because when the media and the culture demonize the free enterprise system and make you think that wealth creation is nothing other than what greedy capitalists know how to do, then it's easy to become intimidated by the workings of successful businesses. As a result of this intimidation, most people who go into business for themselves almost don't want to know how business works. They buy into all the Hollywood and media stories about backroom deals making people rich. Stories that emphasize that wealth is not open to the average person. It's all about who you know. It's all about corruption. And the more you buy into that, the less you want to learn, because you don't believe it matters what you learn. You think it's mysterious. Fortune has to favor you. You start to believe in things like nothing but location, or it's nothing but grabbing the economy when it's on the upswing, and all the serendipitous, trendy superstitions that cynical people grab onto. But all these approaches run counter to truly learning to earn. Yes, you can learn to earn. But if you don't make that commitment to actually figure out how your business or career is going to make money, you just won't make money. If you're not willing to get fascinated with your business and fall in love with its inner process for wealth creation, you will not succeed. You have to really want to take your watch apart and then put it all back together again if you want to be a watchmaker. Many people say that they just don't have a mind for business. They're not being honest. There are brain surgeons doing surgery today who weren't born with a mind for brain surgery. Anything can be learned. Sam said, "I used to chase money-making schemes. Schemes that said you could immediately get rich by doing some exciting thing and making all this money. But I never really understood how those opportunities worked. Remember all the multi-level marketing plans of the 90s and 80s? Basically, people would stand up at a flip chart and start drawing circles all over the place and lines that connect the circles, and then four more circles under there. And the truth is, I never actually understood how that worked either." And that was the fatal flaw. Without understanding how a money-making process works, there will be no sustainable way to make it work. Again, Sam says, "I believe that you have to understand how the money is made before you make it, because if it's like a black box of mystery, if you don't have a proven system and income stream, you have a fluke. So it's important to understand how your money will be made. And if you start a wealth creation project and you can't sit down and explain the profitability process to someone in fifth grade, you should be concerned. You might not have something that you can keep going." That's why a lot of attempts at money-making schemes have failed. People got involved with processes they didn't understand, like the dot-com craze and the internet stock boom. No one ever understood how the money was to be made. People were spellbound by the internet, but they never really learned how those ventures would earn. They invested wildly with no basic understanding that customers would have to be served and made loyal. They learned to attract people to a website, but they didn't have that basic understanding of how a profitable business would follow that up, so it all collapsed. Other people during that ill-fated craze became experts at attracting venture capitalists to their excitement, and that became their whole product, their ability to sell venture capitalists on their excitement. But after that stage, they were stumped. So, if you're in the restaurant business, or if you're a coach, or if you're a massage therapist, you really want to learn how people who succeed at that business do it. Exactly what do they do when they expand their business? Add another therapist? Increase their coaching fees? Increase the hours the restaurant is open? Or whatever they do to start to be more successful. How do they do it and how does it work? Knowledge is earning power. Make sure you understand the process of your business, how you make money, and how you can build on the process to progressively create more wealth. Number 7, give it away before you get it. Winston Churchill said, quote, "We make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give," end quote. To a lot of people, wealth is how much you have. But if you truly want to create wealth, you might want to change that viewpoint. Try thinking of true wealth as how much you give. Wealth is not what you can cling to. Wealth is a flowing. It flows in and out. Think of the waves on the ocean, the power of a tsunami. And that's why we recommend that you don't wait to give it away. The give and take happen together, not one after the other. And one of the reasons giving it away before you get it works is that it takes you away from thinking of money in terms of scarcity. And it takes you away from trying to cling to money, as in, I've got to grab it and bury it in the backyard. Even the greatest cynic can be made to understand that when you don't have psychological hang-ups about losing your money, you're going to make more money and make it faster. That's undeniable. Because without hang-ups, it's easier to charge more, ask for more, and take more imaginative leaps. And so even at that basic level, this works. Giving before you get makes it okay on a subconscious level for you to have large sums of money coming in. You'll be less likely to secretly sabotage your wealth inflow. Do people really do that? Sabotage? Yes. Most people have a secret aversion to making a lot. Do you? If you do, you're not alone. But why fight that all your life? If you make a decision to give it away before you get it, it's a lot easier to lose that subconscious undertow that sabotages your success. Now your feeling about money is elevated. No more irrational guilt or fear. Money is yours to give. This makes it a lot easier to bring money into your life. Giving also allows you to strengthen your prices with a clear conscience. You know the incoming wealth is always going to a good cause. Therefore, you're not inappropriately focused on whether your own poor customer can afford it. So call a great charitable cause and make a pledge, one that means something to you personally. That's giving before you get. And sit down with your partner, or just with yourself, and figure out who's going to get that certain percent of glad giving you're going to do. Contact them. Get their contact info. And as money comes to you, make sure it goes out to them. You can do this exciting planning before a penny comes in. That planning is part of the giving process. It's how you'll give before you get. You do it in your mind. Then your mind gets freed up. There's a group Sam donates money to that builds wells in Africa. If you give them $8,000, there's a government matching program that triples the money. He had heard a presentation on how a lot of the diseases that are preventable in the world today are linked to the water supply. If kids don't have clean water, they're susceptible to a lot of diseases and death. But if you change the water supply in a village and make it clean, pure, and available, then you eliminate many future problems. So if you give $8,000 to this organization, the government will triple the amount to $24,000, which is the amount it actually takes to construct a well. Sam says, when I make a good sale of something and get an extra $8,000 in profit, I never feel guilty about that. Instead, I'm thinking, wow, I can do triple the good with this money by sending it to Africa. So if anyone ever tells me that rich people are selfish, it just rolls off my back. This kind of giving gives you the internal permission to make a lot of money, because you know inside you can be trusted with it to do good. Money finds an easier flow to a place where it's going to be treated well. And treating money well is not keeping it and hoarding it, it's giving a portion of it away. Even before you get it, give yourself time to plan your giving. Write that plan down. Where am I going to start donating money when it comes in? Could you give 5% of everything that came in? We've never known of anyone who couldn't live on 95% of what was coming in. Soon you'll always be looking into funding good causes for your 5% giving program. And many people, once they feel the beauty and bounty of this policy, up their giving to 10% and later even more. Because you've shifted your thinking from scarcity to abundant giving. Why don't more people do this? It's the emotion. People fear that they would be setting themselves up for disappointment. They don't want to indulge in grandiosity. They don't want to be a big shot about giving money away before they even know if they're going to make it in this business. But that's exactly what this concept is going to open up for you. By pre-planning your giving, you will eliminate that fearful thinking and make yourself more creative and open to creating wealth. You'll get that flow going and remove the negative fearful charge from money. You'll take the psychic guilt out of making money because you can feel its circular energy coming into you and flowing out to your good causes. Rather than being clung to, money is now going to you, through you, and out to other people in need. Your self-concept expands. It embodies flow. You can think of giving wealth away as spirituality or karma, or even notice that it lines you up with the laws of the universe. If you believe in a divine master plan, this is your way into it. Once you're in that right place mentally and spiritually, the money will come to you, and this process is the way to get it started. Number 8. Win your own lottery. Mark Twain said, quote, 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things that you didn't do than by the ones you did do. So throw off the bowlines. Sail away from the safe harbor. Catch the trade winds in your sails. Explore. End quote. We wrote our novel, The Small Business Millionaire, about a restaurant owner and chef named Frank who didn't understand the value he was creating. Frank was a composite of the clients we coach who are asleep to the value they create. Frank can go to a grocery store, buy $10 worth of ingredients, and take them back to his little restaurant and make them into a $30 meal. He's just created $20 of value, just by the skill he puts into it. If you cut down a tree, and you take that thing that was just a tree, and cut it into different boards, and you take those boards and make them into a fine piece of furniture that sells for $1,000, you've created $1,000 worth of value. Make sure that you replant the tree. Whereas before, that value just didn't exist. Value is created by the things we do. People were created to create. Many people say, oh, I couldn't run a business or do something like that. I'm bad when it comes to money. Yet that same person will go into a garden and plant things, grow things, and make something out of nothing. Or he will create an agreement between previously disputing family members, or create warmth and assurance for a frightened child. At our best, we are always creating. People who think they can't create great wealth in their lives will then show you a room they've repainted, or they'll go out back and show you a birdhouse they've made. If you were created in the image of your Creator, then you were meant to create. It's as simple as that. All the instincts are already in you. You have it in you to become a small business millionaire or whatever you want to become financially. It's in you. It isn't outside of you somewhere in the latest hot business. It's inside. Sam is never off duty as a great teacher of success. That's not always good news to people who are just trying to make it through the day. If you see Sam coming, either duck down the alley and go the other way or be ready to talk about how success happens. Recently, Sam walked into a convenience store at a gas station, and the woman who was behind the counter asked him if he wanted to buy a lottery ticket. Sam said, "No, that's okay, thanks. I don't need to win the lottery. Do you realize that every person that works at even the minimum wage is going to make more than $1 million in the course of their lifetime? So the truth is, we've already won the lottery just by living in this country. The clerk rolled her eyes and walked away. A lot of people are just waiting for the lottery to happen to them. There are lottery billboards that advertise, "Next drawing, $4 million. Could you imagine?" And now, whenever Sam sees the sign, he thinks, "Yes, I can imagine. But I don't play lotteries anymore because, believe it or not, I think that winning the lottery would be a demotivator. It would actually be disappointing because I would think, 'Oh, shoot, now I can't do this for myself.'" When you say you'd love to win the lottery, consider that if you're walking around on this green earth, you've already won the lottery. The odds of you even being here are trillions to one. Of everything coming together to create you? So you've already won the lottery. Don't try to win some artificial money lottery when you don't know what to do with the money. And also be mindful of the odds. Many people say that the lottery is God's way of punishing people who are bad at math. The odds of winning are so against you. You're more likely to have an asteroid land on your house. The truth is, you probably wouldn't even enjoy the money if you win. Surveys show that over 70% of lottery winners wish they hadn't won because of what occurs with all this unearned money in their life. It becomes a nightmare. Gandhi said, "Unearned money was one of the real evils of the world. It makes the recipient crazy, and it takes incentive away, and it robs you of the adventure and the fun and the joy and the self-esteem and everything connected to being a causal factor in creating wealth." It's one of the subtle things that's different in our approach than popular presentations like The Secret. Although The Secret is a wonderful dramatization of the role of the mind in creating success, it also suggests that you will become rich or have it happen to you after enough inner visualization. Use your easy chair as a spaceship and mentally sail into your own future. Picture your dreamed-up paradise enough times, and wealth will be magically attracted to you. But when we say there are ways to create wealth, we really mean you can actively create it by taking actions. The Secret was a major step forward in dramatizing how toxic it is to always worry and always picture what you don't want. It was also the best dramatization of the pure power of the human mind we've ever seen. We've given copies of it to clients who are stuck in fear, not realizing that worry is making things worse. Worry is a misuse of the imagination. But remember, too, that you can be the causal factor. That doesn't mean you just attract wealth, because there are countless dreamy books on how to attract money through visualization and fervent hoping, and we haven't met any people for whom that alone is enough. Creating wealth asks that we create dramatic service and value. You don't want to rob yourself of the joy of creating in this lifetime. You don't have to start a business to do it either. You can be an employee in a huge organization and start right there. Everyone you talk to is a potential customer of yours. Number 9, get out of your own future. Byron Katie says, quote, "If you want to be miserable, get yourself a future," end quote. It's fine to have big plans and dreams, but wealth is created now, right now, in this present moment. It was never created at any other time in history. It was always now. So once your plans are reviewed, get out of your future and into this moment. This conversation you are about to have is the important one. There are hidden opportunities in every moment, and we miss them if we're always thinking ahead. Allow all your dreams of doing great work, being creative, and making a difference in people's lives to happen today, not in some far-off conditional future. Start where you are. Noted psychiatrist Stanislav Grof says in The Consciousness Revolution, quote, "I have worked with people who had a major goal in life that required decades of intense and sustained effort to achieve. And when they finally succeeded, they became severely depressed because they expected something that the achievement of the goal could not give them. Joseph Campbell called this situation getting to the top of the ladder and finding that it stands against the wrong wall." Don't put off your fulfillment. Don't put your happiness at the top of some ladder you have to climb. Don't wait until you've made it to feel great about life. Wealth is attracted to people who feel great right now, people who know how to use this moment. When people tell you that they hope you reach your potential, they're usually talking about the future. But the best use of your potential is not in the future, it's now. Because your potential is just another word for your talent. And the best use of your talent is right here, right now. What is your talent? Well, what do you love to do? This whole potential racket has a lot of people annoyed and depressed to be on their deathbeds without ever having reached it, like it was a distant star or a brass ring on the carousel. Your potential is not out there in your future. It's in you now. When people see your potential, they're seeing something that's already in you. Otherwise, they couldn't see it. People can't see into the future, but they can see something in you. So, your true potential is not on some faraway star in a distant galaxy out there in the future. It's right here, right now. You can use it today. When we coach clients who are frustrated by their lack of money, our first task is to slow them down. We find that they are passing over golden opportunities right in front of them.